Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from a village above the Sonja Fjord in Norway, and I'm joined by my wife, Wendy. Hello, Wendy.
Hello.
We are in the first week of our month's journey in Europe. We're going to be in Norway, which we're in right now, and then the UK, and finally in Iceland. And this week, we'll talk about our impressions of the Nordic world. And of course, we'll always bring in a little bit about spirituality and what that means in different cultures. Next week, we'll be at the historic Widdicombe Fair on the moor and called Dartmoor in the west of England, and hope to interview some of the revelers there at the fair. We'll see what happens. And then in week three, I'll be interviewing minister, author, and comic Maggie Whitehouse. And if you ever read Unity magazine, she has a wonderful article in the current Unity magazine. I've had Maggie on the show many times before. She's always fun. So she'll be with me then. And then in the fourth week, we'll be in Iceland talking to people there in that wonderful country. So today, we're in Norway. Right now, we're right in the middle of Norway, up in the western fjords, looking down on these beautiful bodies of water in the Sonja Fjord. I may not be pronouncing it absolutely correctly, but you get the idea. It's 125 miles long, comes in from the sea, and we must be about at least 100 miles from the sea right now. But when you look at the banks of the fjord, there's seaweed. So it's salt water. It's amazing. And we see the huge ships, the cruise ships coming through every so often, which is often the way a lot of people see the fjords. But we're doing it differently. We're traveling by car. So we're looking down upon the fjords and the amazing views. And I think we're going to take a ride up one tomorrow. But we just wanted to do it a little differently so that we'd see it from a different perspective. One of the interesting things that happened for us when we first arrived in Norway was going to Oslo, and we were wandering downtown, having a look around the city center, and there was a big crowd of people, and we asked them, well, what are you doing? And they said, oh, we're waiting for the king and queen to come. It's their golden anniversary of their marriage, and they're going to have a celebration service in the cathedral. So we decided to wait for a little bit. It ended up being almost 2 hours, but it was okay. And it was interesting looking at the crowd, looking at the police, looking at the way everything's done there. And then finally the big cars came and dropped off the VIPs. And then finally an old Chevy came and looked like a
Lincoln Continental.
Oh, excuse me, it was a Lincoln Continental.
Convertible Lincoln Continental.
Lincoln Continental convertible comes with the king queen in it, and they go off into the church. We took off then. We didn't stay till afterwards, but it was interesting to see, number one for me, how laid back it was, because if something like that had happened in Britain where I grew up, you know, it'd be huge. There'd be thousands of people. There were probably a couple of hundred people, and the police though were very thorough, and they seemed very laid back. They were chatting with the the crowds. Only when the final car came with the King and Queen, there was a guy came out of a car, this SUV, dressed in total tactical gear and carrying, you know, machine gun or whatever. That looked a little scary, but I guess he was there just in case, you know. So they had it well organized, but it very low key. It was nicely done. But I was musing on the fact that, you know, a lot of Europe, of course, and a lot of Nordic peoples aren't necessarily religious anymore, but they still observe certain, you know, occasions, and so the church is still used in that regard. What was your feel for it, Wendy, that little King and Queen thing?
Well, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was cute how the people, or not cute, but interesting how the people were gathering around to see, and the crowd got bigger and bigger as the time grew near. There were some people that had, like, on the colors and different things, but for the most part, it was just ordinary people there, and they were there to uplift the ceremony and the situation, and uplift their king and queen, and so it was sort of a jovial crowd, I would say.
It was,
And we were, you know, I think one of the things we also took away from it was that the police that were standing around, not including the guy with the machine gun that got out of the SWAT guy that got out of the car right before they came, but the police that were standing around and stuff, they were jovial and having a good time and talking to the crowd, and which was interesting.
So it's one of those little happenstances, you know, you didn't know that was going to, excuse me, show up. But there they were, and we thought, well, we'll wait around and see what they look like. So, and I think they're quite well regarded in Norway. You know, I think it's a low-key monarchy in the sense that there's not a lot of pomp and circumstance. But obviously they're still king and queen, and therefore they have a certain status. But it was interesting, and afterwards we walked down the main street, Karl Johan's Gata, which leads directly to the Royal Palace. So you could see that on the hill. It's sort of Oslo's most prestigious street, I guess you could say. Excuse me.
It was a shopping street.
Yeah, lots of fancy stores, and but also some beautiful gardens and trees and whatnot. So it was. Pleasant part of the country, of the city. And then we went to an interesting place called Vigeland Park, which was about 80 acres of beautiful parkland, actually, on a hill. Excuse me. And it has amazing views over the city of Oslo. But the park is filled by sculptures by Gustav Vigeland, who gave his name to the park. And so you enter in, and there's a walk that leads up the hill to the central fountains, and then there's this obelisk, and everything is sculptures. So there's sculptures all the way along the processional route, and sculptures in a circular formation around the fountains and then around the obelisk. And they're huge monolithic statues, basically, of men and women and children doing all manner of things, all manner of emotions,
interaction
with each other, love. That there's men and men, there's children,
and
there's even a child being hurt or castigated by an adult. There's an angry child, there's a joyous child. It's quite fascinating, and they're all naked, and so you get to see everything about them. And we were musing about that, you know, whether that park would be seen in say, other parts of the world, like in America. It might not be socially acceptable to have all these huge amounts of nudes in a public park. So
might also be interesting that if America knew that not everybody's circumcised.
Yeah, there we go. So the statues showed every single detail. Thank you, Wendy, for pointing that out.
Well, it's just, you know, growing up in America, it's like, you think, I think that they think everybody's circumcised, and that's not necessarily so.
Well, and I think it speaks to, you know, there's a different sensibility around sexuality and the nudity and whatnot. It seems that the Nordic view is a little more nonchalant, if you like, a little more phlegmatic about it, and it's no big deal.
Practical,
maybe. And of course, it's become sort of a cliche about the progressive Nordic peoples, the Swedes, whatnot. But it definitely was there, you know, showing itself in that park. And all manner of people were there, male, female, children as well, you know, enjoying the park. And so it was, after the initial, ooh, that's interesting, it was, well, it's fine. I'm kind of fascinated to see all the different aspects of humanity represented here, all the various emotions.
And that was what was so cool about it, because each statue had a representation of a relationship that we have amongst ourselves and amongst each other, and was very displayed. It was very what would be an adjective for that? It was very poignant. It was very real. It was real. You got the emotion of the relationship that the going on.
It was almost like a city of statues too, because there were so many of them. You got a feeling for the whole realm of humanity and all the various aspects of that. So that was nice too. And then the central obelisk is made up of writhing figures. It must be 20 or 30 feet high, right, from the base, maybe more. Made of figures. So that was interesting too. Sort of humanity is all invested together, connected. So that was beautiful. Some of the statues around the central plinth and the central fountains were monolithic, so they were huge. And his style tends towards the monolithic too, so they're very physical presences. That was interesting too. You couldn't really avoid them. They were there. They were making a statement.
Mm-hmm. You might go to Paul's website, because eventually we'll have probably pictures of it up on there, because it was quite moving, and I can see him posting pictures on his website.
Yeah, I'll probably put some up. I've been putting up a number of pictures on my Facebook to show folks where we are. So check that out if you happen to be interested, enjoy vicariously. I got a few people said they're enjoying the trip vicariously by through the photographs that we put up. So I hope that you could enjoy those too.
Another little interesting aspect to that that artist, the sculpture artist, was that then we were waiting for the road to be open so that we could go over this mountain ridge, and they had closed it, and we missed the opening, and then they closed it, and so we were waiting again for it to open again before we could go over the top of the mountain. And there was this church there, and so we decided to wander into the church. Paul likes to do that. He likes to wander into anybody's church and sit down and have a look. And we've had some lovely times in churches, by the way.
I like going into churches.
In just numerous different places.
Of course, this is World Spirituality, so we go into a lot of churches.
And this one was old, but what was so curious and coincidental about it was that the stained glass in the church was done by the same author. I mean, the same artist that the sculptures were done by.
Yeah, so, that was interesting.
Yeah, that was a really coincidental type thing. And then we were looking at the stained glass that had a whole different theme.
Yeah, the stained glass that Vigiland had done in the church was, amongst other things, the portrayal of the prodigal son. So there's six panels showing the story of the prodigal son. There's a very moving last panel where the child is being embraced, the son is being embraced by his father, and it's quite touching the way that the son gives himself completely to the father, and the father wraps him round with big arms with such love. So it's very, very beautiful. This was in Orlandvangen, I think it's called. It's near the famous Flam Valley, and the church was founded in 1202, and it's huge. It's thick stonework. Supposedly, the king was traveling overland and went into a terrible storm. A lot of his men were killed or were died in the storm, and when he got down into the valley, he gave thanks and dedicated this church. And so it's been around since the 13th century. And in the 1920s, I think, they removed the ceiling from the nave and the chancel and opened up the huge rafters. So it makes it even more dramatic now than what might have been like. The old ceiling, they turned into a belfry, so they ring the bells from that. So it had a very amazing peace in there. It's very peaceful in the fjords anyway. There's a sort of stillness. But then when you go into the church, it was even more still and quite impactful the way the it felt, so the presence of stillness there, very beautiful.
And even more impactful, I thought also, was again that we were looking at an art of relationship, the prodigal son, and how that art again was relaying a human relationship, and how that plays out for us is different, but it was very touching in that stained glass as it was in a sculpture.
Well, I think, you know, what that speaks to also is you don't have to be religious, right, to get something out of the story of the prodigal son. You don't have to buy into the Christianity of it. We can buy into the humanity of it, because it's a great world story of, you know, of our foolishness of wandering away and taking what's really not ours before it's due, and then realizing our mistakes and coming back. But the story is wonderful, archetypal story of loss and return, of losing it and then finding it again, and knowing that the universe, you know, enfolds us and enwraps us in love no matter what. And so that's always wonderful to experience that. And I think it's the same with the sculptures. You know, they weren't overtly religious, and yet they were very spiritual to me, because they conveyed it with an amazing honesty what it means to be alive in all its variety. So that was cool. Talking of Nordic, you can't think about the Nordic world, I guess, without thinking of the Vikings. And, you know, this is a very popular subject. And, of course, there's modern films about it and TV shows about Vikings, whatever. But, we couldn't not go to the Viking ship burial museum, because there's three amazing longboats there that have been buried and put in huge mounds, and were there for over 1,000 years until they were excavated at the end of the 19th century. And the Vikings used to put all kinds of food and clothing and items in these ship burials for the soul as it passed to its next place. And so that made it very, very fascinating. And all the artifacts that they found in there, and the many of them are on display. And it's quite a feat that they were able to take this basically decomposing boat and all the artifacts, put them painstakingly together and display them so you could actually see what they looked like. There was a chariot that was quite fascinating. There were three sleighs. There were all kinds of items of household goods and jewelry and whatnot. But the boats themselves, of course, were amazing. They'd been used as boats for many years and then hauled up on land and put in these pits and then covered for thousands of years. And but now they're there in all their grace in this beautiful museum that's in the across the Oslo fjord from Oslo itself. So it's very moving place to go. And also they showed some films and explained some of the culture of the Vikings. The Vikings were a very enterprising group of people, as we may know, and got all over the place, because they got to America before Columbus. Got that. Oh, that's not, we're not supposed to know that. got to Baghdad and the Middle East, and came down the rivers in Russia, went to Spain and Morocco, and so they were all over the place. They found artifacts actually in these burial chambers that came all the way from China and Pakistan. I think there was carnelian from Pakistan, and there were coins from the Middle East and beads, and it's quite amazing the trade that was done. And they were very religious people in the pagan sense, and worshipped the typical Norse gods, but they had this very deep belief in what we might say in unity, the interconnectedness of everything, and the fact that nature was very important to them. And I read in one of the panels that most of the men were tattooed from finger to arm, up to the top of the arm, with various tattoos of trees and spirals and other deities and other images. And I thought that was quite fascinating. We think of Vikings, of course, as being very fierce and you know, taking and raping and pillaging and looting and whatnot. And they certainly did some of that, but they were also fine craftsmen and obviously had a sensibility, because you look at some of the Norse sagas that were written they by the Vikings, and they're very beautiful literature. So I encourage you, if anybody's never read any of the sagas, Njal's saga, for instance, is a very fascinating saga of what it means to be alive and the resilience of being alive. So in some ways, they were very stoic people had that sensibility. They had to be tough, I think, to do all the things that they did. I like to think in some ways, the Vikings are kind of like bikers, you know, that the modern day biker is sort of has a reminiscence back to the Viking, in the sense that we're not sailing the seas, but we're going down the highway on our bikes. The tattoos are still common. The culture of the biker. Especially,
I didn't know where I was going next, Paul. You know, I'll follow you most places with a bike now.
No, I'm not going to become a biker, I don't think. But I have no tattoos. It's a terrible thing. But the idea of independent spirit, courage, and that kind of
forging
your own life. You know, whether you think that's great or not, I think there's a certain resonance there, and maybe we need that. You know, maybe we don't want to become a biker gang or whatever, but we might want to take some of the qualities that were enshrined in that. In the Viking consciousness, you know, to stand courageously for what we believe, and sometimes that's missing. I think, you know, in our modern society, we tend to go along with what everybody else thinks and everything. Anyway, just they don't want to go too far into that, because this isn't a show about how great it is to be a biker, But you know, there's room for all. I think that's what I'm saying. There's room for all in our society. And sometimes we can learn from even the people that we feel are very different from us, and to stay open to that and not to feel like, well, I'm a certain way and this is how I think. It's always good to step outside and see it from another perspective.
And I think being an explorer too, I had to admire looking at those boats and knowing as a sailor what it might have been like or could have been like sailing in the ocean with that open boat, like what was being displayed in front of us, and thinking, you know, well, I know better because I know the luxury of a nice yacht, but they must have been brave souls to be out there in the ocean and just be vulnerable to the elements. Something else there.
Yeah, another thing it said in one of the panels was that they were highly attuned to nature, in the sense they knew the patterns of the wind and the stars and the waves and everything that was happening around them. So they were able to maneuver in a way that we might not be able to do today.
Yeah, that's because we maneuver by our phones.
Yeah, we maneuver by our phones. We rely on the other things, you know, technical things, whereas they relied on their own intuition and understanding of the planet and the way things move. And I think sometimes we would be advised to get back to that, to, you know, not to give up our technology, but also to be,
incorporate
some of the other aspects and enjoy that. Because to go into nature and be still, you can learn a lot, you know, by the flow of the wind, by the creatures that come and go, by the way the trees grow, etc. And I think that's the same with interactions with human beings, you know, rather than judge another. What can we do to listen to the other person, understand what their perspective is? It may open us up to new understanding ourselves, which we need, I think, in this somewhat divided world. Folks, I'm with Wendy, my wife. We're talking about our visits to Norway as part of our month-long journey through Western Europe. And we are coming towards the break. If you are interested in this show, check out it has a Facebook page. You can also check out my website at pauljohnroach.com and check out some of the other shows on this Voice for an Awakening World too, because we have some great shows and there's some new ones starting up. But I'm grateful that you're listening to World Spirituality right now and supporting the work that I endeavor to do on this show, and we will be back after these messages from Unity, back to talk more about the Nordic world. I want to talk about Edvard Munch, the great artist, and some other things, so join us there.
Thanks for joining us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
When listeners like you contribute to Unity Online Radio, you're making a positive difference in your life and the lives of other spiritual seekers. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate to make a one-time donation. Or sign up for monthly contributions. Thank you for your support.
Here's a Unity Mindful Moment with Eric Butterworth, taken from the live lecture, A Course in Practical Metaphysics.
Emily Cady, in her Lessons in Truth, makes a statement which I think we need to kind of think about a little bit. She says, God is not a being with qualities or attributes, but he is the good itself coming into expression as life, love, power, wisdom, etc. He is the good itself coming into expression as life, love, power, and wisdom. In other words, and this again is shattering to some of us, God is not loving. God is a loving God. God is not loving, because the moment we talk about God as loving, we've got the anthropomorphic Michelangelo-like God sitting up in a crowd somewhere with his heart beaming out and say, oh, I love you all down there so you're so dearly, as long as you're good. But I'm not going to love you very much if you don't go to church and so forth. God is not loving. God is love.
To find out more about Eric Butterworth, visit unity.org.
Look who's making a difference in the world. It's the New Thought Walden Award honorees. Profiled in Unity Magazine, the September-October edition, Unity has joined with its New Thought partners to honor 27 leaders serving in the areas of spirituality, healing, interfaith understanding, caring for the earth, and social activism. These are people you need to know about. Pick up Unity Magazine or go online to waldenawards.com.
Did you know Unity has published a new book by Eric Butterworth? This wonderful writer and teacher, who is loved by so many people, left a recorded class called Practical Metaphysics that has now been turned into a book. It's Vintage Butterworth, He explains how to live from a deeper state of consciousness and awaken to health, love, prosperity, and peace of mind. Practical Metaphysics. Find it online by going to unity.org and click shop.
Recovery from addiction can be a lonely experience. Get help and support with Reverend Lonnie Vanderslice, Reverend Dan Beckett, and Spirit of Recovery every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Central. Welcome to a place where spirituality and recovery meet. Each week, you'll hear stories and topics that are important to the recovery community. Tune in for some lively conversation and join in with your questions and comments. Nearly 21 million people struggle with addiction in America. Reach out and join us here on unityonlineradio.org.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
Oh, here we go, coughing to start the reconnection. Sorry about that, folks. I got a little bit of cough going. This is Paul Roach. This is the second segment in the show on Norway. I'm here with my wife, Wendy, just talking about the Nordic world as part of our tour of Europe in September. And we've been talking about various aspects of the culture here, the religious aspects, the Vikings, whatnot. One of the things that has been a lifelong dream for me is to see the Munch paintings. Edvard Munch has always been a famous, has been a favorite of mine. And of course, he's famous for The Scream. I think we're all familiar with that painting. It's become very popular. I don't particularly like The Scream as much as I like all these other paintings. So The Scream's pretty amazing. But we were in a room with 26 other paintings in the National Museum, and it was just amazing because I looked at them all thoroughly, but then I just sat there and let them all sink in on me. Because here's an amazing technique and ability to be representational, yet also very expressionistic. It's almost abstract, some of it. And fascinating.
He does both. He actually does both. His abstract gives you one emotion, gives you an emotion just as well as that what he creates in like the face of a person that's a more of a realistic type painting creates an emotion also. He puts that, he can really grasp the human emotion and put it forward in a painting, whether it be abstract or a realistic.
Right, because of some of the expressionism, there's the use of landscape and background in the paintings that convey emotion as well as the image that's in the painting. So you get this whole depth of feeling from the painting. And of course, at the time when he was first painting, it was considered way too difficult for people and insulting for people, because he talked about deep inner states of mind through paint. And and he was at the same era, I guess, that psychology was beginning. It was the end of the 19th century. Things were breaking down. There were movements towards modern art. And he was one of those progenitors of that new way of thinking and expressing and feeling, and wonderful stuff. It's quite intense, I guess you could say. It's not a, we were saying as we were there, would you want any of these paintings, at home in your room? They might be just too much, but they're just fascinating to look at. And yeah, I might not want one of them around every day, but I like to look at them every so often.
And I don't think that the monk was too worried about whether they were going to be in somebody's house or not. He was obviously on a mission.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Anyway, that was fascinating to go see his stuff and be, like we say, be in the room with it. And if, for any of us who've been and enjoy art, there's something wonderful, isn't there, about going and looking at a beautiful piece of art, and letting it emotionally impact you, and maybe spiritually impact you. I remember when I was young, I went to the museum in Vienna called the Kunsthistorische Museum, the Art History Museum, and there's a room full of Bruegels in there. And that just took me away too, because when I was a kid, I used to carry around a book of Bruegel paintings. I liked his art so much. A lot of peasant art, a lot of figures in it, but a great understanding of psychology also from an earlier era, and just being in that room was magnificent. So maybe, you know, wherever you are, there's a museum near you, and you can go and just sit in front of a piece of art, wandering around without trying to understand it intellectually. Just let it speak to you viscerally. How does it impact you? What does it bring to you? And maybe it'll bring some peace and understanding, or a greater view of what life is about, and get some of the intensity that the artist must have felt at that time. I know some people say, oh, I don't want to go to museums, it's boring. I can't understand that myself, because how could that be? But then again, I'm not a big fan of Six Flags Over Texas or one of all these big roller coasters, and a lot of people love those things. So,
and speaking of playing
different
fun,
strokes for different yes. folks.
I mean, Paul is never into playing fun. That's for darn sure. I mean, when the streetscape looks like planned fun, Paul wants to go another way. And traveling with Paul is like that too. If the cruise ship is on port, we're someplace else. He does not go where everybody else goes.
Well,
and it's
yeah.
a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun doing that and finding it. And people are sometimes in the countries that we visited have been fascinated, like, how'd you get here?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that I think, you know, the modern day tourism is becoming, some people are saying it's becoming out of control. And I think they were saying that there's 18 million people visit Amsterdam every year, and the population of Amsterdam is less than a million. So you're talking about huge amounts of people entering that city in a given month, and that's a huge overload. So you're seeing more tourists than you're seeing anything else. And you could say the same thing about Norway. I'm sure that the cruise ships, you know, coming in and taking over the town or whatever. But we found that if we do a little bit different the thing, you know, don't go to the places where everybody else tends to go, because they're the super famous places. But go, we drove through the super famous places, but we didn't linger. We went a little bit off the beaten path. And then you'll find, less people. We did a hike that was not very well known today, but exceptionally beautiful. And I think we saw about three or four people, you know, in 4 hours worth of hiking. So it is possible to do this if you do a little forethought. Again, in Bergen, which is a beautiful city, there's a very popular downtown area full of tourists. But if you go a little bit off the beaten path, you'll find these wonderful restaurants and places to enjoy, where, you know, there's some tourists in there, but most of the people in there were actually Norwegian. And the food was great. And so it's easy to do if you have a little thought about it and not go to the places everybody else goes to. So anyway, that's just our little take on tourism. I'm always amazed, you know, when I was growing up in Britain, if you get like 100 yards beyond the car park, then there's nobody around. You know, everybody's still staying around the car park and all the amenities there, whatever. So it's important to press on ahead into something different. And you yield rewards, I think, because of that. You see things that you might not have seen otherwise. Also, just as we mentioned earlier, just walking into a church and see what's in there. We had no idea that the Vigeland sculptures that we'd seen in Oslo that were mirrored by the Vigeland stained glass pieces in this church. So a little happenstance there that was quite interesting. Also, I like to talk to people wherever we are, and the man who was holding up the traffic, because they were doing some road work, turned out to be from Poland, and we chatted for a while about his experience in Norway and you know, with his homesickness for his own land, and etc. And so that was cool too, because, you know, there's interesting people to meet wherever we go, and I'm always amazed at the people that show up. We had a waitress from Romania in one of the restaurants we went to, and she shared a little bit about her story. So fascinating. We're all you know, mixed up together in this world, and you know, unfortunately, we don't want to admit that. We won't want to go back to an era where we all look the same, but, you know, we don't look the same anymore. We're in a multicultural world, and I'd like to celebrate that. That's my soapbox. I'll get off it now. We had some other experiences of the landscape. You want to talk about that, Wendy? The landscape here is quite fascinating because it's very wild. And there's lots of forests, and of course the fjords themselves are wonderful. But then we went on a mountain road onto the top of the plateau, and it goes up through tundra and then up to basic rock. And you could still see the huge evidence of the glaciers as they scraped that rock back in the last ice age. That's a wild landscape up there. And as you drop down through these biozones. So you went through the tundra again, and a lot of the ground plants that were growing there, and then back down into the forest, and different kinds of trees growing at different elevations. Quite fascinating.
There were waterfalls all over the place, and huge waterfalls, because these are glacier mountains on either side going down to the fjords. They raise up, I don't know how many feet, but they raise up about thousands of feet. Yes, and so the waterfalls were just spectacular coming down. And so when we went up over the top of this glacier mountain, I told Paul, I said, I want to find the top of the waterfall. There's got to be the top of the waterfall. But it's like finding the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Here we were on top, and I was like, there's got to be, it would be so cool to go find the top of these waterfalls that come all the way down to the fields and feed them and make their water so blue green. And it's just fascinating. Where did that water come from?
Absolutely.
It's also fascinating that even though you're traveling up and down elevation, you're still at sea level when you're at the field. You're at sea level. Otherwise you wouldn't have any water in it. So that's also fascinating.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes people, you know, interested in the fjord landscape, because it is so different, and the fjords themselves are very still. There's some ripples on the water sometimes, but the feeling you get is it's amazing stillness to them, and they go very deep, some of them, because if the mountains go up several thousand feet, the fjords can also be that deep below. So very mysterious in that regard. And some of them are very precipitous, you know, the rock formations and the woods themselves like fall straight down, and that's very dramatic. So it's an unusual landscape in that regard. But it's also very cozy almost. There's a sense of warmth, and the light is, of course, the northern light is very beautiful. And here's another thing. Although I've been talking about Norway and its landscape, I'm a big proponent of enjoying the landscape wherever you are. We were talking about this earlier, Wendy and I, the other day, about the fact that Mother Earth is beautiful wherever she shows up, which is everywhere. And so you can't compare and say, oh, well, there's nothing like Norway. Well, there may be not, but there's nothing like your backyard either. There's places in Fort Worth where we live that we love, even our backyard, which drops down as a wood of cedar elms and some oaks down to the little creek, and it has its beauty as well. And we enjoy the nature that is there, all the various birds. So I think it's important, once again, you know, just like I said, go to a museum and look at a painting. Also go out into nature, go into your backyard, go into a park or out into somewhere that hasn't been developed and experience it and enjoy, because there's something there. There's something that will show up for you that you would not have guessed.
I think today was our first day that we really got to like hike out into nature. We've been in some beautiful landscapes. We've been in some beautiful cities, and we were traveling. And before we were traveling, we were busy. And before we were busy, we were in Kansas City, and we were driving. So getting here finally and getting acclimated after being sleep deprived and going out today. And we had also experienced some things that came up that we had to deal with that we didn't know we were going to have to deal with. And but anyways, going out into nature and just sitting with it for a little bit. And we sort of had a goal of where we were going to go, but we knew we also had to get back, and we didn't quite make it. And it was uphill, quite steep. And what that gave us, though, was an opportunity every time we had to stop and catch our breath. An opportunity to enjoy our surroundings and not just walk with our heads down and intent on going somewhere or doing something. It gave us an opportunity to sit and breathe in the smell and hear the birds. And I found a quietness coming over me that I guess not quite realized I didn't have with me anymore, but it had been renewed because of that, just stopping in nature and enjoying.
Well, I think that happens on vacation sometimes, unless we're lying on a beach for 10 days and not doing anything.
Well, that can happen there too.
But I think a lot of holidays end up being, you know, you need a holiday or vacation from your vacation because you're trying to see so much, you know. Oh my, I got to see everything that's on display in Oslo. I got to go to the next place. And that's unfortunate, because I think it's important just to enjoy where you are. You don't have to see everything. If you see one thing well, then you've seen everything, in the sense that, you know, there's a commonality to many things. And it's better to go deep with one or two things than it is to try and see, you know, a superficial understanding of as much as possible. I know I was bad about that when I was young. You know, I'd want to get up every morning and rush and do all these things. But
I'm
much better now, yeah. And you don't have to see everything. But, you know, on the other hand, if you feel, you know, oh, I want to see it, go see it. That's fine. But I think it's more enjoyable if you can just relax into it and know that you've got to see the right and perfect thing for you. One thing that happened for me on this trip was peacocks, and I wrote a blog about it, put on my Facebook, and I think it's going to go on my website also. Just before we left on a highway in Fort Worth, we saw a peacock right on the side of the road, which is highly unusual. And then when we were talking about finding out about the Viking ship burial, one of the animals that was buried there with the chieftain was a peacock, which must have come all the way from India, which is quite amazing. And then in our room in our hotel in Oslo, there was a vase of poppy heads, and peacock feathers. So began to muse about peacocks. And one of the images from the ashram we used to attend a lot in West Wales is Subramaniam, Lord Subramaniam, the son of Shiva, who is attributed to be the one who overcomes all adverse forces. And he rides a peacock. And so I've always liked peacocks, and I like the idea that Subramaniam rides a peacock. But it struck me that the peacock is often about arrogance, you know, preening and showing off, and yet is also very beautiful. When the peacock allows himself to be ridden by the god, by the deity, then all those qualities that are inherent in the peacock become spiritualized. So even arrogance becomes, or pride, becomes beautiful because it's pride for spirit, not pride for ego. And so in the same way, I felt like when my ego wants to strut and preen like the peacock, in and of itself, it's not beautiful. But when it serves the spirit or the higher awareness, then becomes beautiful. And all the qualities that are naturally inherent in my humanness become lifted up. So it's not a question of trying to kill the ego or become something else. It's a question of allowing that humanness to serve something higher, just as Subramaniam rides the peacock. And I love that idea because I think in the West, we want to kill out, in the Christian West, we want to kill out the bad, you know, the devil. Whereas in the East, there's an integration of all aspects into the one. And for me, that was powerful to see those three images of the peacock and then to muse about the connection to that spiritual understanding that comes from the East, from Hinduism. And how it connects in with my own humanness. So again, it's a question of watching and listening for things that may show up that may have a deeper meaning for us, which is fascinating to me. Wendy, do you have anything on that?
Well, I do think that keeping our eyes and ears open to oracles and signs and contemplating their deeper meaning brings a better awareness of who we are, because I do think that the universe shows us, and I'd much rather be shown in multiple sightings of peacocks than bashed over a head with a 2x4. So.
Yeah, right. Learn in a gentle way. You know, and the important thing is, you know, to try and make this happen, you know, that, oh my God, I'm looking for meaning everywhere. And squeezing meaning out when it's maybe not existent, because then we're forcing the issue. I'm talking about just relaxing and seeing what shows up. You could say, oh, well, seeing those peacocks images was, a coincidence. And maybe it was, you know, don't make a big deal out of it. But as we often say in Unity, there are no coincidences. So we can find meaning in things in a very natural, effortless way. And so I'm not trying to force anything. I think that's one of the things Jesus said, you know, the kingdom of heaven is trying to be pried open with violence, he said. And I think that's when we take our spirituality, we try and make it happen all the time. And sometimes it's important, well, no, not sometimes, it's always important to release and let go and surrender to all the beauty that's already around us. Because when we can do that, then the things that we need to see show up for us. They're always there. It's just we don't always see them. And I like to travel in that regard too, that what's mine to see will be there at the right and perfect time, the right and perfect way. I don't have to force it. And when I can trust that, it seems like things do work out quite well.
I enjoy traveling with Paul because it does seem to work out that way for him, and I get the benefit from it.
One final thought. We're in a little guest house right now in somebody's home, and it is completely, the walls are all pine wood. And,
Norwegian pine.
Norwegian pine. So I can't help think of the old Beatles song, "Isn't It Good, Norwegian Wood?" And there's a beautiful quality to it. It's got a sort of a fragrance. And I believe it was made in 1993, but it looks like it's just been made today because it wears well. It's a beautiful paneling throughout the whole house here. So that's nice, too. And, yeah, when I was a kid, you know, I loved that song from the Beatles, Norwegian Wood. And we had that feeling in Britain that... you know, in Norway, you had all these beautiful landscapes and the beautiful wood and the textures and everything and the Nordic sense of design. You know, we have IKEA today from Sweden, right, which reflects that too. But there's something magical about it. I'm sure John Lennon had that going on when he wrote that that beautiful song. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to be surrounded by the wood. And the person who owns the house told us that she didn't want to have panels on the have regular sheetrock on the wall. She wanted to be natural wood because she loves nature. And in fact, she has spent a career as a guide in nature and has written a book about it. And so we feel honored to be here in her home and in this beautiful part of the world. All right, we're at the end of the show. Is there anything else you want to say, Wendy, about this particular stretch of the journey? We're in Norway. Next week, we'll be in England.
I think that, you know, I don't know, this week I've really been contemplating how it is the relationship that we have with where we are and what we can do with that and how it brightens you just to be aware of wherever you happen to be, even if it's sitting in a train station or sitting on a rock in a beautiful hillside, that being alive and being present is very important to renewal and calming and peace in your world.
Yes.
Just by coming aware, because it's a perfect moment. It's a perfect moment. No matter where you are, everything is perfect at that point in time.
It's the journey, not the destination. You know, we had a wonderful interaction with the Europe car rental person. you know, and you could say, oh, well, I've got to get the car, got to get moving, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But it was fun getting the bus from the city center down to the place and then chatting with him and then getting in the car and going. So every step of the way, it can be enjoyable. All right.
Here we go.
We're at the end. So everything, here we go. Next week, we're going to be at Widdicombe Fair. It's an ancient fair in England in the middle of the moors in Dartmoor and Devon. I hope to be talking with some of the folks there. And so I hope you can join us. Thank you so much for listening to World Spirituality.
Bye-bye. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.